Prologue. Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Boston. 15 years ago, 2:03 a.m. A head cold had been bothering him for close to 2 days. He should have been in bed, but there was no one else. Bright fluorescent light strips ran across the white ceiling. They flickered, hurting Faye's eyes. A burning stench of wires and rubber passed his nostrils, which he covered with a tissue as he stepped into the student dining hall. The first floor of the building had 4 congregating spaces, including 2 dining rooms and an executive education suite. The space was once a respectable restaurant, now stained trash cans and a cash register lay smashed on the floor. The coolers that had served desserts and beverages stained the tiles. Faye's nose twitched as he fought not to sneeze. The fire had scorched the eastern part of the building several hours ago, and burned smells from overcooked hamburger spillovers congested the space. The juvenile justice office was understaffed, and if he hadn't taken the call, they would have put this next victim under the courts. He was here, like so many other times, to meet another offender who had to be afforded a meaningful opportunity to consult with an interested adult. Him. Faye Jasso, Senior Juvenile Behavior Officer. His gaze darted to the far end of the room where 3 cops stood examining charred walls and kitchen equipment. 2 delivery staff answered their questions as the eldest cop scribbled notes on a pad. Faye approached them, nearly tripping over a plastic tray, and flashed a child services identity card. "You say the fire started in the offices above?" the cop asked the delivery staff. He reminded Faye of a dishonest child. Hooded eyes the color of amber, and chocolate-colored hair sitting under a dark hat. He was short but broad-chested. "Yes, the labs." "Were there many people here?" "It was after hours. Just Channing and I here on the meat delivery night shift." "I see," the cop said, jotting down more notes. Faye stood a meter away as the cops continued their line of questions. 2 carbonized heat lamps stood in the corners of the room. They warmed the crime scene against the November blizzard that had started across New England that morning. His eyes moved to the right of the room. It was then he saw the girls. One sat on a low stool, her jeans and Converse shoes covered in soot. The other stood against the far wall, her face away from him. He glanced at the notes he'd scribbled down when he'd received the phone call. Sleep hurt his eyes, but he couldn't afford it now. He blinked twice until his concentration returned. The fire had been started by the twins, the girls. That's what the woman at the Boston Police Department had said. "You're the best at dealing with these juvenile cases," Officer Rail had said. "That's why I called you first. It's not the only time these girls have been in trouble." "You," said the short, note-jotting cop who'd barked everyone into submission. Faye glared at him. "Yes. I don't like to leave criminals loose, but you got to me before I could do anything. If I had my way, these 2 would be locked up without child services getting involved." Faye studied him. "The call said they're 15, which puts them under the juvenile justice system. For now. You'll have 48 hours to get them straightened out, or they go back in the care of the state." "What did they do exactly?" "Started a fire in the above labs. Witnesses say they were working on an experiment of some sort when their professor caught them with substances they shouldn't have been using. They blew up the lab, leaving no evidence of what they were working on." "What substances?" "Boric acid, titanium metal." Faye heard footsteps behind him. "Darcia Huxham of Massachusetts East Child Services," said a woman behind him. Faye turned. "I take it 1 twin is mine." "You'll each take 1 girl," she said. "You are splitting the twins," Faye said. "We never split families before an investigation, especially not twins." The cop set a brown paper folder into his hands. "Listen, they've caused enough problems on campus. This is their last offense, and I won't have my team repeatedly taking calls from here. I've got court authorization for you to have a go at sorting them out." Faye's throat clenched. This was where it all began. They were fraternal twins from the looks of the files they'd shared with him, very different in appearance. The cop made his way to the girl on the stool and pulled her to her feet. Her annoyance flared. Her eyes bore into him, and tiny curling tendrils escaped the heavy silken mass of ebony hair. She had a girlish prettiness. Her oval face was delicate as if to contradict the crime she'd been accused of, arson. She shrank back a little at his cordial approach. She's in your care for 48 hours. Get her sorted, the cop said. Faye set a gentle hand on the teenager's shoulder. She jerked back, and even with the cuffs firmly clasped around her wrists, Faye sensed a rebellious strength. Officer, we won't need these. You sure? He said. He led her to the door and only managed one glare back at her sister, now in the care of another arm of the law. Like the twin he was leading away, her sister regarded him with searching gravity. Several minutes later, Faye observed the teenager's eyes trying to study her thoughts as he settled her in his Ford Escort. He hunched forward, leaning over the steering wheel, and drove the 7 miles to the juvenile residential center on Webster Avenue. Faye tried not to look at her through his rearview mirror. Dark, snappy eyes looked out from her toughened face. She wasn't scared. For an instant, a wistfulness stole into her expression. She was thin but healthy. Why had they wanted these two separated? They were teenagers and the typical age when most juvenile offenders commit crimes. Were they as bad as the police report he'd read on them? Under-18s committed more than 1 million crimes a year, but Faye believed most were victims of a broken system. These two had burned the cafeteria to the ground. Deliberately. But why? No one was hurt, but Massachusetts Institute of Technology, better known as MIT, in the town were ready to abandon the girls to the pits of law enforcement. Fraternal twins. One tall and lanky, the other shorter and more feminine. Whatever they'd been working on had raised eyebrows, which only meant one thing, especially if these orphans were at a prestigious technology institute. The girls came from a desperate welfare system, but the looks in their eyes betrayed they were smarter than most. Their talent got them here. But what sort, exactly? He intended to find out. Faye shifted the car into a parking space outside the juvenile residential center. He glared at the girl in the rear view mirror. She breathed heavily and implored him with her eyes. She knew she was in trouble. We're here, Faye said. No response. He pulled out the folder the cop had handed him and scanned it. It was enough. The report was clear, and the highlights of her past year at MIT painted a clear picture. Repeated danger to class and professors. Often alone. Age 4, IQ of 159, just 1 point below that of Einstein and Stephen Hawking. Rivals with twin sister. More like competitors. Age 4, preferred to read Charles Dickens at school instead of playing. An unusual memory. Unusual hobbies from age 2 and in-depth knowledge of certain advanced subjects, especially maths and physics. A deep awareness of world events from age 5. Is this genius an abnormality? There's warm food in there. Should we go? Faye said. A stare never left him, but she didn't respond. He pushed open the driver's door. The wind bit at his face and he stepped out of the car, craving a cigarette. With the folder still in his hand, he shut the door, keeping the cold out of the car, and reached for a Marlboro in his overcoat. Faye's mouth felt dry and dusty like old paper. A loud sneeze brought him back to his predicament. He'd forgotten his medicine. Damn it. He reached for his cell phone. What the heck was he going to do with this girl? He scanned the file for the number listed for her former foster home. It was a number from Virginia State. His fingers tapped the digits into the cell phone. A barely audible voice answered. Yes. Faye set down the folder and drew his coat tight as a biting chill shot down his spine. Mrs. Dennehy. My name is Faye Jasso from Child Services Boston District. I'm calling about a case of two girls you would have looked after when they were the ages of 2 to 10. The twins. So you remember? What's this about? I'm not at liberty. Please, they need your help, Faye interrupted. Anyone who'd worked in this field didn't just walk away from juvenile cases unaffected. If Dennehy was anything like him, she'd want to help or know more. Do you remember them? He said. No one can forget those twins. May I ask you a few questions about them? She hesitated. Why? What's happened now? Now? Mrs. Denny's voice clogged. I always knew something would. I'm sorry. I can't speak to anyone about them anymore. I left fostering because of them. Please, Mrs. Denny. I think she's in real danger. What do you know? It is crucial you help me before the state takes her to God knows what in 2 days. The girls could be put away and we both don't want that. I can help one of the sisters at least. Mrs. Dennehy's voice softened. All right. I'll help, but only because those girls never stood a chance. Can you start from the beginning? Like where they came from and how they came into your care? That's just it. No one ever knew where they came from. They were found in a cornfield in Idaho, not more than 24 months old. Babies, really, but no one would have thought anything other than they'd been abandoned, except the girls could speak and read fluently. Later, a DNA test identified they were related and indeed twins. She paused long enough to stifle a sob. I'm a smart woman, and I could tell they were very special. How so? Many ways. They could do things many children couldn't. Did I hear you say they could speak and read fluently when they found them? Yes. What else could they do? The most remarkable thing about them was their math skills. By the time they were 8, it was discovered they were brilliant self-taught mathematicians. They completed high school by age 9, and when they turned 10, their mental and intellectual development was that of college graduates. Faye glanced at the folder again. The girls were listed as pursuing MIT graduate degrees in computational science and engineering and health sciences and technology. What happened to them after high school? I told the state to give them special care and perhaps help. They were prodigies, but their emotional development needed attention. I remember noticing they feared nothing. They were socially challenged. Glaring headlights flashed over his face as a dark Rover pulled onto the street. He squinted as the car inched forward. That's when the group showed up at my doorstep and took them, she said. What group? Not sure. But I think it was the government. I can't prove it. What happened to the girls between then and their enrollment at MIT? I don't know. That's all I can share. I must go now. I've already said enough. Please, just one more question. Are the twins a danger to themselves and others? The phone went dead. She'd hung up. The Rover had pulled to a stop parallel to his car. Faye waited for several seconds. 3 men and 1 woman, all dressed in grey matching suits, stepped out. He stared at the dark windows and his feet felt heavy, as if they no longer belonged to him. Jasso. Yes. Faye Jasso. This can go on all night. What do you want? The woman circled round to the passenger door of his car and pulled the handle open. The girl's body went rigid, her face ashen. A hand closed over the twins' right shoulder and the woman forced the girl's wrists together. She was joined by her colleague. The girl rammed a foot into his chest with force unlike any Faye had seen, sending the man crashing down onto the concrete sidewalk, where for several moments he failed to move. The woman tasered the girl, and she flopped into the back seat of the car at the sting of the electric current. We'll take it from here now. You've taken the case as far as you can, the woman said. Leave her alone, Faye said. She's in my care. Who are you? That's business of a highly classified nature, said the woman. Faye's eyes darted to the open door of the Rover. The girl's twin sister lay unconscious on the back seat. He stepped forward, clawing for the pistol the woman drew from her holster. The gun's barrel tunneled into Faye's temple, its cold edge making him tremble uncontrollably. This wasn't right. He had 2 days. Who the blazes were these people? They'll be well looked after, Jasso, the woman said. Leave them alone. A sharp blow landed on his jaw and sent him to the concrete, joining the other man. He raised his hand and wiped the taste of his own blood from his jaw, his body fighting tremors of pain. The giant man who'd administered the blow gripped a fistful of Faye's coat and pulled him upright with a swift tug. We've been searching for them for 5 years. That professor woman Dennehy changed their identities so we wouldn't find them. She hid them on her college campus. Did she think, as head of computer engineering at MIT, we wouldn't find her and the girls? Well, now she'll regret it. Faye struggled to his feet, but the blow had been more than he could stomach. He hunched over, his arms resting on his thighs. The man shoved him to his knees and advanced toward the rover. Faye could only stare as the girl sped off far away from him. He'd failed the juvenile case. He never heard of the twins again.